Yes. That would be me. I nodded at the guard, moving to peer through the glass window of the door. The officer stepped aside, and then there he was. The man I no longer understood or knew. The man who held the life of another in his rotten little paws.
5 minutes.
The officer said, dragging a hand through his short blonde hair. 5 minutes is all I need. Turning the doorknob, I looked back at David. He ground his teeth, his head slightly cocked.
I'd ask if you wanted me to join you, but I think I already know the answer.
You do. I patted his arm. I want to be alone with him. He scowled but accepted it.
Scream if you need me.
I laughed under my breath. Got it. Inhaling deep, I pushed the door and traded the sharp smell of disinfectant and giggles of nurses for the more subtle smell of a man I'd grown up with, hidden beneath medicine and bleach. Sudden gratefulness filled me. The last time I was in the hospital was to stay vigil at my father's bedside while he recovered from his heart attack. We'd walked out together, and I wouldn't be here today visiting Greg if it wasn't for him. I'd called the police station and asked for a meeting, but had been laughed off the phone. I'd asked Larry to arrange it, believing he'd have contacts that would make it easy, but he had no jurisdiction over a felon who wasn't his client. That left me near tears and furious when Dad walked in to bid me goodnight. I spilled my frustrations, and he'd mentioned he'd ask one of his friends to see if he could help. Up until this morning, I had no hope that anything would come of it. But the minute I walked wearily into my office, Dad had announced I had a meeting arranged thanks to Patrick Blake. I hadn't managed to spend much time with Dad since my reassurance and the many hugs after my abduction, but I squeezed him so damn hard when he gave me the news. Apparently, Patrick Blake, fishing buddy and fellow golf enthusiast, was actually a judge. Belle L hadn't been free of its own lawsuits and court appearances over the last few decades, and thankfully, Dad had befriended a few people along the way. He fished with a high judge. He played golf with a district attorney. He had friends who had held his hand while grabby people tried to sue for ridiculous things, like incorrect sizes offending their snowflake personalities. He hadn't once asked for favorism or help fighting such claims, but for me he'd requested approval and managed to give me the 5 minutes I needed to try and save Penn's life. Not that I told him it was for Penn. He would have said no. He'd approved of Penn before this nightmare, and I'd hoped he'd stand by him while incorrectly incarcerated for something as noble as saving me. However, what he wouldn't approve of was Penn's prior convictions or his unsavory backstory. He was a good man, my father, but a snob through and through. Only the best of the best could marry his daughter and run Belle L, which was hypocritical when he put so much energy into getting me together with Greg, only for him to be the worst of all. Greg opened his eyes as I shut the door with a harsh slap, getting his attention.
Shit, L?
He sat higher in bed, shuffling against the mountain of white pillows, his skin rosy with health not white with sickness.
Came to visit. You love me after all, huh?
His smirk made me rage. I hated that he was here being pampered, while Penn was in jail going through who knew what. My hands curled, holding back my temper. Shut up, Greg. His forehead furrowed. For a moment it looked like he'd retaliate, and a small frisson of fear bolted into my legs, remembering how it felt to be washed, unwanted by him. To be naked in front of him, cook for him. Such normal things, but it left a terrible taste in my mouth that could never be washed away by mint toothpaste. He's a creep, nothing more. Stalking toward the bed in my black high heels, I stopped close enough to glower, but far enough not to touch. My eyes fell on his wrist on top of the starched sheets. A silver handcuff attached him to the steel frame of the bed. That was karma. A few days ago, I was the one in cuffs. Now he had the joy. I smiled before I could school myself to be cold and aloof. I see it's your turn to be imprisoned. He bared his teeth.
It won't stick. I'll get a good lawyer.
I held up my hand. Stop. I don't want to hear any more of your delusions, Greg. Before he could launch into another tirade, I said, I'm here for one thing and one thing only. His eyebrows rose, his body relaxing into a flirt.
Oh, yeah?
His gaze traveled over me.
Come to finish what we started?
I hid my shudder. He wasn't worth my retaliation. Withdraw your statement about Penn.
What?
His green eyes flashed with surprise and darkened with anger.
No way! Look what that bastard did to me!
He raised an arm, showing a few bruises.
He fucking broke me!
I see nothing but a spoiled brat, milking a stay in the hospital before he goes to jail. He froze.
I'm not going to jail, Al.
I say otherwise. The metal handcuff jingled on the bed frame as he shifted again, uncertain but still trying to dominate the situation.
He broke my ribs and bruised my throat. I've had a headache since.
Oh, spare me, Greg. I waved a hand at his prone body. All I see is a boy who never grew up. You're an adult. You have to take responsibility for the things you've done and the people you've hurt. Moving closer toward the bed, I growled. I won't ask again. Revoke your statement about Penn. Drop the charges.
Why the fuck would I?
Why? I bared my teeth. Because you kidnapped me, tried to rape me, and attempted to steal my company. Yet here I am being civil to you, asking you politely to be the bigger man and let Penn go. His face turned nasty.
He's not going anywhere.
My skin crawled, fighting quicksand, a losing battle. Why did I think I could come here and negotiate with Greg like he was a sane, logical-thinking adult? He wasn't. He had a screw loose or 10. Fine. You leave me no choice. Looking over my shoulder at the door, I moved closer. Close enough that he could touch me if he wanted, but close enough to hurt him if I did. Drop the charges.
Fuck off, Al. If I can't have you, no one can, including that asshole.
I didn't respond, focusing on my task. Drop the charges or else. My voice mimicked a general giving the orders on a firing line.
Or else?
He laughed.
Who are you trying to be? A CEO who actually has the balls to threaten?
I'm being myself, and I do have the balls to threaten. I held up my finger. I will ruin you. The door cracked open, followed by David's command.
Miss Charleston, step back. You have 2 minutes remaining, according to our friend out here.
Close the door, David. I didn't look away from Greg. I know what I'm doing. He knew better than to argue with me in public. The door clicked shut, leaving me alone once again. I tried to do this kindly, but Greg was an asshole and left me no choice. Drop the charges against Penn. Tell them you mistook everything that happened and no longer want to follow through with your statement.
No way. They'll prosecute me for lying.
His mouth twisted, knowing he just slipped into truth. The sticky substance had a way of coming to light beneath the slickness of lies.
Besides, I'm hurt. He hurt me. Bastard will get what's coming.
I breathed hard through my nose, doing my best to stay calm despite the overwhelming need to wrap the IV cord around his neck and strangle him. Don't care. Be honest for once in your miserable life and accept whatever punishment is coming your way. Or... He still didn't look afraid, merely entertained, waiting to see what I would do.
Or?
Or I march back to the police station, and I tell them in graphic detail how you raped me, how you took advantage of me against my will, how after multiple times of hurting me, you planned to kill me. He instantly froze, filling with doubt.
You wouldn't.
I would.
They'd prosecute you for filing a false report.
I shrugged. If it's the price to pay to free a man who shouldn't be in jail, then consider it done. I would do it because he's right, and you're wrong, and I'm sick of not standing up for the truth.
But that's a lie. You're insane. Why would you fucking do that?
I shook my head, unable to believe he had no concept of loyalty or love. Did he even love his father like a normal son? Or was his selfishness a commanding passenger, making him only think of himself? Time was running out. Taking the final step toward the bed, I hissed. So help me, Greg. I'll turn the kidnapping and Bell-El takeover into a rape and attempted murder. I'll hire every lawyer I can and pay them to bury you in a life sentence. I'll do whatever it takes to make sure you're never a free man again. I glared with hooded eyes. Who knows? Maybe I'll push for the death penalty. He gulped.
You wouldn't.
Wouldn't I? I raised an eyebrow. I tried to be nice to you, Greg. If you want me to play hardball, I will.
You weren't even with that fucker.
The handcuffs screeched on the bed frame as he wriggled with anxiety.
It was a fake engagement. Why the hell are you...
Because he's worth it. He's decent.
He's a liar.
Not anymore. Greg snarled.
You're completely batshit.
The door opened. The police officer entered the room.
Ma'am, your time is up. I'll have to ask you to leave.
I looked over my shoulder, smiling demurely. It's fine. I'm finished. My smile turned into a knife when I glanced back at Greg. Yes or no? Tell me right now. Will you do what I ask? He pouted, yanking his arm, making the handcuff jangle once again. He wouldn't make eye contact, glowering at the drip, the heart rate monitor, everything but me. I waited for some resemblance of contrition, that his money-hungry brain would put self-preservation first rather than screen over another, just because Penn had things he didn't. For a second, I thought I'd won. His shoulders fell, his pout turned into questions. But then he looked up, locked eyes with me, and something changed. Hard-edged contempt replaced his petty, childish greed. He snickered.
Oh, Al.
It sent sharp claws down my back, shredding me. He murmured soft and sultry as if we were in bed together.
Guess you'll find out in court, won't you?
The world slowed down. I'd come for a conclusion, to free Penn and finally uphold my side of the debt. But instead, all I got was uncertainty. The open-ended, unresolved fear that Greg wouldn't do what I demanded. That he would willingly gamble with his life if it meant destroying Penn's. That he would force me to lie under oath and join him in his manipulative game. That it might all backfire and I'd be the one behind bars for committing a crime. This was stupid. I hate him. How dare you? I seethed. The police touched my elbow, making me jump.
Ma'am, time to go.
This isn't over, Greg. Fury stole the rest of my voice as the officer guided me from the room while Greg blew me a condescending kiss. I'd come to save Penn. I'd failed. I'd screwed up. Again.
Chapter 22. Penn. 4 days in hell. I still had the cell to myself, which at least gave me some privacy. Recreational time and meals, I kept my head down and behavior impeccable. I didn't brown nose or try to make friends, but I didn't answer back or act like a dick if someone spoke to me. I knew the rules. I stuck to them. Larry told me to hang in there and stay focused on getting out. He pumped me with confidence only he could, thanks to the previous miracles he'd worked on my behalf. I didn't let the thickening anxiety drown me, because he was on my side. He said he was working on my case when I'd been given a phone pass 2 days ago. Visitation rights were still pending and probably wouldn't be granted for a while. Remand prisoners sometimes got better rights than our convicted cousins, but most of the time we got worse. They like to claim visits and phone calls were detrimental to remand prisoners because evidence hadn't been provided to the court yet, and no verdict had been granted. Documents and information pertinent to particular crimes had a way of going missing, but at the same time, fact-building and truth-collaborating stalled because communication was denied. An unwinnable situation. But hopefully, my lawyer and benefactor of not just money, but friendship and happiness would find a way. Like he always does. Besides, phone calls were better. At least, I didn't have to sit across from Larry and see the fucking disappointment in his eyes. It would kill him to see me back here, and I'd already spent last year fearing he'd die. I didn't want to be the cause of his stress all over again. Not to mention, I couldn't think about Elle in a place like this. I couldn't call her because it ripped my heart out knowing I couldn't touch her, kiss her, look her in the eye and tell her everything she wanted to know. She knew who I was. She didn't know my past. Would she still apologize to me after I'd told her everything? Would she still trust me? Or at least learn to trust me? We were forced apart, and we would remain apart until I was a free man again. And if that ever happens, I coughed with pain. Well, I guess it's over then. I wouldn't let her waste her life waiting for me while I festered in this hellhole. Shuffling forward in the line for lunch, I handed over my tray as the men on kitchen duty slopped a runny taco with the barest amount of cheese. I pursed my lips in disgust, then moved on to collect a bottle of water and a rosy apple. Taking my food to the table squashed against the wall, I climbed over the bench and sat heavily. The prior times I'd been here, I didn't remember being so fucking down. Sure, I wasn't happy, but at least I still had a laugh with one or two of the guys I had become friends with. I still had the motivation to go to the library or work hard on assigned tasks throughout the week. This time, fuck, I felt so tired. My body hadn't gotten over the beating. My joints were still hot and swollen, reluctant and stiff to move. I hadn't slept well with the occasional nap while glaring at the ceiling, and I had no desire to make friends, even while I knew it was safer to be liked than ostracized. I just didn't fucking care about anything anymore. Maybe it was because I'd tasted what true happiness should be. I'd been wealthy, working toward a good cause, and falling in fucking love with a girl I'd wanted for 3 very long years. To have that stripped away, it hurt. A lot more than being told I had a bed and regular food after months of roughing it in a New York winter. Hey. A guy with black dreadlocks and a spider tattoo on his cheek sat opposite me. His long legs looked like a praying mantis as he clambered over the bench. Named Scoot. I took a bite of my apple, extending my hand like civilized society demanded. Pen. We shook, then released. Scoot dived into his taco while I worked on my fruit. You in for long? He asked. I shrugged. Could be. Me? I'm here for 17. Served 3. Not even halfway there yet. I nodded in commiseration, placing the apple core to the side. As much as I should chat and get to know this new crew, I found my mind slipping backward to a few years ago. To the day when Larry came for me, and I was able to leave as a free man. 2 years, 3 months ago. We're leaving. I did my best to control my heartbeat as it fucking leapt. However, I couldn't stop my mouth from hanging wide in utter fucking surprise. Are you serious? For 3 months, Larry had been a regular visitor. Between representing Gio and me, I guessed he spent most of his life behind bars. The only difference was he got to go home at night, and we stayed inside. I shook my head, not daring to believe. How? Lack of evidence and too much circumstantial heresy. You're free to go. He grinned, waving with his briefcase to the door. The door. That was open. The room where we always met had become a safe haven for me. I didn't know where in the prison it was located or how many steps I'd need to take before I traded locks for freedom, but just the words free to go made my blood pump fast, feeding limbs speed and power, ready to bolt and never fucking stop. But I have so much time left. Time that was never yours to serve, he leaned forward, whispering. I wasn't able to point fingers at Sean Twigg this time, but I'll continue to work on the case. I've had a few interesting leads pop up, so I'll follow those and see where they go. I couldn't. How the fuck did he do this? Why had he helped me? What made me so damn special? Larry had achieved the impossible. Not only had he freed me, but he'd also kept me away from Arnold Twigg's hatred by not targeting his son. To this day, I had no idea why Twig hated me so much. Was it because I tried inherently to be good despite doing bad things? Because his son was a fucking idiot who committed crimes because he was bored? Or had I mistakenly pissed him off at the beginning, and he'd had a grudge ever since? Either way, it didn't matter. Free. I'm free. I almost fucking came with how sexy that word sounded. What will you do with the information once you've got it? I tried to keep my voice disinterested, when really I panted for knowledge. Would he go after Sean? Would he give me an even greater enemy in Arnold? He cleared his throat. I guess that's up to you. Most of me wanted them to pay, to do the time I'd been forced to and steal parts of their lives in return. But a part of me was still terrified of Arnold. He had the power to lock me up all over again. I should run and disappear, leave New York, so he could never touch me. Larry followed my thoughts.
As far as I'm concerned, this is over unless you want vindication. You're free to do whatever you want.
He grinned.
If in the future you want justice and decide to go after Sean and his father, you'll have to promise me one thing.
After everything he'd done for me in the past few months, everything he'd listened to, the judgment he didn't give, the kindness he delivered, the updates he gave on Geo in Fishkill, the visits he gave Stewie in Child Protective Services, the decision to apply for temporary custody of a kid who wasn't his just because he clicked with him and wanted to provide a better future than the one he had. Fuck, I'd give him anything he asked for. I promise.
You don't even know what it is yet.
Don't need to. You've done me a solid, Larry. Name it. He smiled, and it was full of friendship and respect, rather than demeaning and cruel.
Promise me you won't end up here again.
His face shadowed.
If we do go after Sean and you end up back in here, God knows what Arnold Twig will do to you, or how far he'll bury you.
Goosebumps spread under my prison uniform.
That wasn't a hard promise to keep. I'd keep it for me, not just for him. I have no intention of ever ending up here again.
Good. Keep it that way.
Larry placed the paperwork I just signed, accepting my release and terms of my parole, back into his briefcase.
Let's go, then. I think a burger and fries are the first points of business, don't you?
My mouth watered to have junk food while surrounded by air and no bars in sight. You're on. Marching toward the door, I paused on the threshold, expecting a hand to clamp on my shoulder or an order to return to my cell. Fear crashed over my thoughts of burgers, believing for a split second that this was a dream and I'd wake up in my cot with years left to serve. But nothing happened. No commands. No punishment, no opening my eyes and seeing the same gray cell.
What are you waiting for?
Larry pushed past me into the hallway.
Come along, I'll have to leave you now while you're processed, but I'll meet you out front.
He patted my back.
You okay, kid?
I swallowed the nerves, excitement, terror, joy. Yeah, I'm good. This is all so surreal. Eating in a fancy-ass dining room, listening to the conversation between Larry, my lawyer-turned-guardian angel, and Stewie, Geo's baby brother. I couldn't get a grip on reality. I liked Larry. I loved him for what he'd done for me. But we were still lawyer and client, not friends. We were on our way, but people like me didn't let their guard down easy. For years, I'd lived alone on the streets, scraping for safe sleep spots, fighting over good quality dumpster food, arguing over the best corners to beg at. Making friends in that situation wasn't easy, so I avoided everyone. If someone smiled, I took that as a threat. If someone followed me, I took that as war. For Larry to open his house to me, a fucking thief, and make me welcome, well, that made me feel like a real shitty person that I didn't have his class and trust.
It also made me ache inside, with a heart that long since stopped looking for affection, when he and Stewie grinned at each other. Their relationship was totally different from ours. Theirs was pure and uncomplicated. Man and boy, tutor and student, father and son. They laughed with each other, joked. Stewie giggled with intelligence that I'd never seen him show on the streets. And Larry poked fun at him, throwing corn kernels, not caring if he got food on his expensive dining room rug. I didn't say much that first night. I couldn't. I just soaked it in, waiting for life to interrupt this wonder and say, "You asshole, get back on the streets where you belong." Instead, Larry offered me a place to stay until I got on my feet. He told me I could earn my keep by helping him with other cases, that I could go with him when I was ready to visit Geo, and maybe let bygones be bygones and become friends, thanks to Stewie. To him, the offers were so simple, but to me, they were the motherfucking world. Before retiring to the guest room, where a queen-sized bed and navy-striped linen invited me so much better than scratchy single bunks, Larry called me into the drawing room, where he and Stewie were playing a game of chutes and ladders. I doubted Stewie had ever played games, let alone board games, with no other purpose than social fun. His fun had been lighting fires with Geo to destroy evidence. Probably a pickpocket or two.
"Ben, before you crash, Stewie has something to give you."
Larry looked pointedly at the kid with slightly protruding ears, who stared at the game board, as if he could magically make the dice roll so he could avoid all the chutes and climb all the ladders. When he didn't look up, Larry prompted,
"Stewie, remember what you wanted to give Ben? You spoke about it this afternoon when I said he was coming to stay with us for a while."
Stewie's head suddenly sprang up.
"Oh, yeah."
Pushing up from the coffee table where he sat on his knees on the thick carpet, he bounced over to me, pulling something small from his pocket.
"Here."
Handing it to me, I flinched as the cold slither of a necklace fell into my palm. A sapphire star. It might have been 9 months since I'd seen her, but I remembered everything she said. How Geo and Sean had run off with her necklace, how her father had given it to her as a 19th birthday gift, and how she'd forgotten to ask for it back. She'd also said it wouldn't have been hers anymore, but mine for saving her. I'd told her no fucking way would I accept her charity, and yet somehow the necklace had ended up in my possession anyway. It's not mine. I'm not keeping it. It has to go back.
How?
I cleared my throat. Why do you have this? Stewie dug his foot into the carpet.
Geo gave it to me when he got snatched.
Larry came over, holding a glass of amber liquor, looking content and completely relaxed, even though he had two thieves living under his roof.
He asked Stewie to keep it for him, so he didn't get charged for the robbery and attempted rape you were currently serving time for.
He lowered his voice.
That would have been highly inconvenient to Arnold Twigg if evidence came to light, and the girl in question testified that it wasn't you who'd accosted her in that alley.
My heart pounded. This one piece of evidence could clear my record of that misunderstanding. All I'd need would be for Elle to collaborate my story. I could have vindication. But then I'd also have two vicious enemies. Sean was still out there. Who the fuck knew what he would do if he learned I was free and ready to start fighting rather than remain the easy scapegoat?
You didn't return it to her?
I looked up, fingering the sapphire as if the jewelry could magically transport her to me.
No.
Stewie reached for it.
It's mine. I gotta look after it. Keep it safe.
It's not yours.
I held it up, just out of reach.
Do you mind if I borrow it for the night?
Larry met my eyes over Stewie's short height. He tilted his head, trying to understand why I wanted to keep something so unusual and unimportant to me. But he was wrong. It was important. So fucking important. I wouldn't say it out loud. I wouldn't admit that the plan to head to bed and sleep safely for the first time in forever had been put on hold for a few more hours. But somehow, he knew. He smiled, full of secrets, as if he'd stolen mine and made them his own. I'd told him a little about Al. It had been a mistake. I'd been down one day and didn't want to talk court cases and potential freedom. So he'd brought up girlfriends. I'd snorted and said, of course, I didn't have one, but then slipped as I mentioned the girl who'd kissed me in Central Park. The entire story had come out, including the saga about the missing sapphire necklace.
I don't know.
Stewie chewed on his lip.
I'm not supposed to let it go.
I ducked to his height. I know, and I won't do anything bad with it, I promise. The lie burned my tongue, but I loved how easily it came. How swiftly I was able to bullshit. Was that my first real lie? The practice run for the torrent about to come? Larry moved forward, placing his hand on Stewie's shoulder.
Let Penn borrow it. He's heading out, but he'll be back soon. Won't you, Penn?
His eyes were serious, intent on hearing my assurance.
How does he know? Upper East Side, number 22 on Cherry Avenue.
I didn't need to ask who the address was for, just like he didn't need to ask what I was about to do. Not looking at Stewie, unable to see the unwillingness to part with the necklace, I nodded once at Larry. I'm coming back, I promise.
You'd better.
He tipped his glass in a salute.
I'm counting on you to keep that promise.
You can trust me, Larry. With Elle's necklace clenched in my fist, I jogged to the front door and disappeared into the night.
Fuck, she's even more beautiful than before.
My heart hit a stop button and hung love-struck in my chest. Noelle Charleston, the girl from the alley, the name seared into my mind thanks to her identification card with the logo of Bell L, the largest retail chain in the U.S. She thought I hadn't noticed, that I didn't believe her when she said she was an office worker, at the one place I could never enter without a security guard throwing me out. My wardrobe told them all they needed to know, and the fact that the last time I snuck inside, I'd taken a nap in the houseware department didn't help my case. I found it sexy that Elle worked there. I had fantasies of her working hard, renting a tiny studio, making something of her life while I looked up from squalor below. I respected her for her tenacity to better herself. I was attracted to her for her lack of confidence or willingness to talk about her life, when minimum wage made her so much richer than I was. I'd become infatuated with her from the start. It turned into an obsessive need to know her the longer we walked back to her home. And when she mentioned it was her birthday, and she wasn't even out of her teens yet, I had the disgusting desire to be the first to welcome her to adulthood. I'd taken her to the park to see how far her limits would go, a sheltered little girl out for a thrill, but then she'd agreed to follow me, to break into that park with me, to trust me. Then she'd fucking kissed me, and I no longer wanted to test her but steal her to be mine forever. I'd lived in pure happiness for an hour out of so many years of loneliness. That was before the night ended, and I never saw her again. Until now. She sat in an overstuffed armchair with a gray cat on her lap, stroking it with languid pets while her shoulders remained tense. Her long blonde hair that I remembered filled with leaves and grass clippings from rolling around on the baseball field, draped over the back of the chair while her eyes locked on three males in front of her. Two older, one around her age. Their lips moved, faces speaking with animation that I couldn't hear. The closed windows were airtight. The occasional whir of traffic and murmur of dog walkers meant I couldn't distinguish any other noise but the city buzz. The sapphire burned my hand, demanding I knock on the door and give it back. To say, "Hi, do you remember me?" To kiss her if she'd forgotten, and remind her if she hadn't. I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt about why she hadn't come looking for me. Why I'd thought about her for 9 long months. But she'd moved on and dismissed me. But the longer I stood in the manicured bushes, hiding me from the street, and spied on her life, the more I understood why. I thought we had a connection that night. I thought she'd fallen down the same slippery slope that defied logic or reason as I had. Turned out, it might have just been one-sided, because there she was, smiling at the boy opposite with his sandy blonde hair and a smirk that said he wanted to fuck her, and she'd probably let him. She wasn't surviving in a crappy apartment with annoying roommates and eating budget groceries to make ends meet. She wasn't dressed in cheap clothes and costume jewelry, so common to girls her age. Nope. There she sat, leading a pampered life in a spoiled little world. She was the daughter of a rich man. She had a pampered kitten in a spoiled big house. She was probably allergic to work and had servants for everything. To prove my case, a woman in an apron trundled into the living room with a tray of baked goods and a teapot. Elle smiled at her, but didn't get up to help pass out the sweets. She waited like the men until the woman had placed cupcakes onto glass dishes, accepting the food cordially, but with the airs and graces of someone used to having things given to her. This wasn't a recent climb up the monetary ladder. She wasn't poor and now suddenly rich. She'd been born into wealth, and it dripped off her. Why didn't I see it that night? Taste it. Smell it. Fuck. I was so stupid. For so long, I thought she was an employee, that she knew the value of hard work in a different capacity to me, but still understood the cost of survival in a big city. I gave her excuses about why she couldn't find or visit me in prison, even if she didn't issue a statement saying I was innocent. To her, I would have been an adventure, nothing more. To me, she was untouchable, something I could never have. Standing outside her castle, wrapped in the shadows I'd befriended, I gave up on my stupid fantasies. She was nothing more than an overindulged brat who ran away from her doting father to be something she wasn't for a night. She wasn't who I thought she was. She'd let me believe in a fairy tale. I had no time for brats. The visions of returning her necklace faded. She didn't need it. She probably had thousands of replacements. I wouldn't be lying to Stewie tonight. He could have it back. He was the rightful owner now. Not her. With a stupid heart that had finally learned its lesson, I turned and walked away.
Chapter 23. Elle. 2 weeks passed. An insanely long 2 weeks where I went to work but didn't manage to do even the simplest of tasks. I constantly hounded Larry for updates on visiting hours for Penn, and promised him unlimited funds to gather whatever information he needed to submit for Penn's case. Dad kept popping in to check on me, but for his benefit. I kept my stress hidden. He didn't need to know I hadn't slept properly since the night Greg took me. He didn't need to understand I couldn't carry a normal thought without almost bursting into tears, thinking about Penn locked up while I carried on my life as if nothing had happened. I couldn't shift the guilt. The awful compounding guilt that history had repeated itself, and instead of banging down police doors and ramming a bulldozer into the prison for a jailbreak, I was twiddling my thumbs bound by bureaucracy and tied up with paper pushing. Even Fleur hadn't been able to get me out of my depressive funk. Thanks to her heart of gold, she picked up my slack and kept Belle-Elle running. She told me what to sign and when. She helped prepare my notes for business meetings and ensured my wardrobe screamed CEO, when really all I wanted to do was cry in the corner with Sage. Enough with the pity. You told Greg what would happen if he goes after Penn. Hopefully in another few weeks when he went to trial, or Penn went to trial, or whatever was supposed to happen next, Penn would walk free, and Greg would pay for what he'd done. The last I'd heard, he'd been transferred from the hospital to some penitentiary system and processed. No mention of bail or whiff of him being released. Would Penn and Greg see each other inside? Would they be kept apart, knowing the history and the reason for Penn's incarceration? I had so many questions about the law and judicial system. I hated being uneducated on topics I'd never had to know before. Clicking open a new web browser, I typed in, "How to free someone framed for a crime they didn't commit." As the results loaded, my phone vibrated across my desk with an incoming call. Sage tried to swat it before I scooped it up and looked at the caller ID. Larry. I couldn't answer it fast enough. "Yes, Larry. Any news?" Poor guy called me every day and got the same panicked questions.
"I'm downstairs. They've allowed visitation. I'm heading over there if you want to come."
I stood up so fast my chair fell backward. "I'm on my way." Willingly walking into such a clinical, terrifying place tied my stomach into unfixable knots. My heart lodged in my throat as Larry guided me through the process of signing in, being searched and given a visitor badge. The forms we had to sign. The rules we had to abide by. It all made me believe I was a guilty party, and I'd never be allowed to walk out of there again. How did Larry do it so often with his clients? How did loved ones visit their incarcerated family and not have panic attacks while trudging the hallways to see them? David had followed in the Range Rover, even though I traveled with Larry in his town car. I'd refused to let David come in with us, and the last I'd seen of him before entering this awful building was his pissed off and frustrated expression where he sat in the parking lot. "Why did it take so long to grant visitors?" I asked, handing over my gray cashmere jacket to go through the X-ray machine.
"Long?"
Larry chuckled.
"My dear, this is quick. I'll admit I leaned on a few people to make this happen, but consider this supersonic."
"It's been 2 weeks.
2 weeks is nothing for a remand prisoner."
"Remand?" Larry slowed his step, educating me on this terrifying new world.
"Being held in remand is what Penn is currently facing. He hasn't been convicted or even given a trial date. He wasn't granted bail based on his prior record, and could technically endure a long stint before we can show them the truth and get him freed."
I swallowed hard. 2 weeks had been awful. I didn't think I could wait much longer. It wasn't the fact I needed him with me, or that I desperately needed to just talk to him to smooth out our crinkled edges. I just hated to think of him in here, locked up like a beast. "How long?" Larry cleared his throat. His unwillingness to answer made his cheeks flush.
"Well, I've already invoked the right for a speedy trial, which technically means it should go before a judge within 45 days. However, Penn is special. I wouldn't be surprised if paperwork goes missing or inevitable delays occur."
My shoulders sunk as if he'd piled sand on top of me, burying me alive. His voice shifted into caring.
"We'll get him out, Al, but I've had some cases that can take anywhere from 1 to 3 years for a verdict to be reached."
The floor wobbled, as if it suddenly became a surfboard in high seas. "What?" His hand landed on my forearm, features filling with pity.
"That's why so many people take a plea bargain, because it means they can skip the long wait time. But in Penn's case, he can't."
My brain throbbed. "Why?"
"Because any plea bargain would bury him, thanks to enemies in high places. His only chance now is to plead not guilty and accept however long it takes to get that hearing and have evidence speak for itself."
I wedged a fist into my stomach, trying to hold in the acid threatening to wash away my heart. "Greg will testify against him." Larry's face darkened, but he shrugged as if it wasn't a big deal. He couldn't hide the fact that it was a very big deal.
"Well, I have a few game plans up my sleeve, so that shouldn't matter too much."
I didn't want to ask, but my lips formed words, and they traveled to Larry's ears. "What if they don't work? What if they..." He shook his head, squeezing my arm kindly.
"One thing this business has taught me is to not play the what-if game. If there are any monsters in this world, Al, it's those two inconsequential words. What if? Well, if you invite that question into your life, you'll go insane, and nothing else will matter but the ever-evolving answers and terrors that what-if can provide."
I shivered. It wasn't the first time Larry had been so wise, nor would it be the last, I was sure.
In here.
The officer acting as our escort guided us down stark gray hallways, where harsh lighting offered no comfort. My heels clacked as we passed through another locked door, with bars in the glass windows.
You have 30 minutes. No touching, no tampering with prison property, no giving the prisoner gifts or contraband. Break the rules, and you'll be asked to leave with a 3-week non-admittance. Got it?
Larry rolled his eyes.
Frank, you know me. I'm here all the time. When have I ever broke the rules?
Frank coughed, rubbing his prison guard uniform importantly.
It only takes one, Mr. Barnes.
He narrowed his eyes at me pointedly. Larry rubbed his mouth.
You know, I had asked for a private room. Important lawyer stuff to talk over. You understand.
Frank scowled.
Not today. Fully booked. Take what you get. Next time, maybe.
Larry tapped his temple in farewell.
Next time it is.
Taking my elbow, he added.
Come along, El. Let's not keep Penn waiting.
We pushed into the room, and instantly my eyes leapt over the couples and families, gathered with their heads close over meal tables. The gray day outside offered no warmth to the gray misery inside. The only window showed gunmetal clouds with the odd speckle of rain on the barred glass. Larry muttered under his breath.
He'd better not have refused his visitation rights.
He searched the room, looking for a handsome, arrogant prisoner, and finding nothing. He can refuse? My heart lurched. Why would he refuse?
Because he has this stupid thing called pride.
He lit up.
But it seems today he's decided to join us after all.
Pressing my elbow again, he guided me toward the back of the room where a man in dark green overalls, same as all the other men in this place, appeared by the door escorted by a guard. The instant his eyes met mine, the prison faded. It was only him and me. Me and him. Larry didn't even factor. My arms ached to hug him. To tell him I was here even if I wasn't there the first time he'd been arrested. I muttered under my breath. I hate that stupid rule. Larry raised an eyebrow.
What?
The no touching one. He chuckled.
Ah, yes. I didn't factor in how hard that would be for you two. For me, touching clients isn't exactly normal procedure.
Penn was in hearing distance, striding forward to join us.
I stopped being your client the moment you gave me a bed for the night.
Larry grinned, relief coming off him in waves.
That's true, and you became the son I never had when you agreed to come back to New York with me for my treatment. I know how hard that was for you.
Penn flicked a quick glance at me, hiding yet more things. Where had he been before Larry got sick? Did he hate New York because of the imprisonment, or were there other factors too? Factors like me. Hello, Penn. I tucked my hands behind my back, mainly to stop myself from reaching for him, but also to hide the shakes at seeing him again. It was the strangest day I'd ever been on, with a lawyer as our chaperone and the state prison as our restaurant of choice.
Elle?
He crossed his arms, his biceps tight and arms ropey. Did he cross them for the same reason I kept mine behind my back? So he didn't reach for me? Are you okay? I glanced around the room as Larry took a seat at a free table.
Fine.
Penn motioned for me to sit too, pulling up a chair to face us.
You?
Good. I grabbed my hair, twisting it into a rope over my shoulder, like I always did when I was nervous. Penn's gaze followed my hands, black hunger flashed with desire. His eyes stopped on the fading bruise on my face, his jaw clenching.
If he wasn't already in lockup, I'd punch him all over again for what he did to you.
I had no reply. Should I tell him I'd paid Greg a visit? That I'd been idiotic on his behalf? That I would never stop fighting for him? The awkwardness between us reached an epic 10. My hands itched to grasp his. My lips ached to kiss away the pain of our last meeting and start anew. Why couldn't we touch? How would we delete this strange tension? I couldn't stop looking at him. His tousled hair, the thicker growth on his face. He hadn't shaved, and for the first time, he looked like Nameless from 3 years ago. His lips were the full, kissable ones framed by a dark beard, half of his prettiness masked by stubble. My heart growled with possession and apologies. I couldn't stop reliving the awfulness of him walking down the stairs in police custody, telling me he had no way to convince me he was who he said because he'd never told me his name. How could I be so blind? Tears tickled, welling from the constant pit I tried my best not to swim in. Ben, I'm so sorry. He stiffened. His jaw worked as his eyes filled with emotions so deep and tangled. I'd need a century to learn everything there was to know about him.
I know.
He lowered his face, his gaze hooded and dark.
Me too. It's me who should apologize for...
No. I shook my head fiercely. You have nothing to be sorry for. It's all my fault. A lonely tear escaped. It's my fault you were taken the first time, and now history has repeated itself. It seems whenever you're around me, I get you locked up. He chuckled, his chest rising and falling, begging me to touch it, to smooth away the remaining faded yellow and green of his bruises, to reassure myself that he was still eating and drinking and staying alive even while caged up. How did I ever believe I could walk away from him? How did one truth delete so many lies and make everything seem inconsequential now he was back in my life? Technically, Penn was a stranger. Realistically, we had two lifetimes to reveal and compatibility to test. But something intrinsic and basic linked us together, ignoring timelines and date numbers. I'd wanted him from the moment I first met him. I wanted him now I knew the truth. There was so much to say, but how could we with so many people watching and listening? I wanted to spill how many sleepless nights I'd had while searching for him, how my need to find him wedged a small splinter between my father and me, how I'd never looked at another man because a part of me still believed he was the one. You can say all those things. The other prisoners are here with their own families. They wouldn't listen to us when they had such a finite amount of time to listen to the people they loved. I opened my mouth to blurt a billion things at once, to tell him just how desperate I was to fix everything I'd done wrong. However, Larry saved me from tripping over myself with inappropriate nonsense.
I'm in the process of finding out when your hearing will be. I'll get it fast-tracked as quickly as I can.
Penn nodded, keeping his thoughts about that hidden.
Thank you. Anything you need? Anything you think will benefit me in overthrowing this?
Larry pulled out a legal pad, ready to take notes. Penn snorted.
Apart from getting Arnold Twigg on the stand and interrogating him with hard evidence of his tampering with my life? Nope.
He leaned back in the chair.
Talk to Gio, see if he's had enough, and is ready to throw Sean under the bus. He was coming around to the idea the last time I visited him. He agrees it's fucking stupid to serve time for a crime that he only did on Sean's encouragement.
That reminds me. Talking about Gio poked awake all of my questions, making them buzz like angry bees. Why do you have Gio's license in your safety deposit box? The sentence splattered against the table with an offending command. I hadn't meant to say it with no lead-in or kind words. Whoops. Penn stilled, his eyes narrowing on mine.
You went through the box?
I jumped. Lies sprang to spill. No, of course not. I would never. But I was sick of lies. Truth only from now on. Yes, I took ownership. Every piece. His lips ghosted a smile.
And?
And?
You want to know why I have Gio's license?
I nodded. Yes.
Anything else?
I frowned. Penn leaned forward, toying with me in his sexy, cocky way. Even trapped in here, he still captured me with every look and word.
You must have other questions apart from Gio.
My heart turned into a hot piece of coal, desperate for the prison to vanish and a bed to miraculously appear, so I could torture Penn with kisses to tell me the truth, or let him torture me with them while telling me anything he wanted. I licked my lips, my body heaving and wanting. I have so many questions. We'd be here until next year if I asked them all. His nostrils flared, hearing the sex in my voice.
I don't care if it took 10 years.
He switched to an intoxicating whisper.
But not in here. It fucking kills me to see you in here.
Pain cloaked him as if remembering to cover his emotions from the harsh elements of incarceration.
If I'm being honest, I didn't want to see you today.
I flinched as if he'd slap me. What? Why? Larry sighed, understanding when I didn't, allowing Penn to enlighten me. The intensity between us hummed as his gaze dropped to my lips, then back to my eyes. He throbbed with frustration, but most of all, embarrassment. His voice snapped.
Because I don't want you seeing me like this.
His sudden temper couldn't hide his anger.
It isn't a good place, Al. Having you here, it fucks me off, all while making me so damn grateful that you're willing to step foot inside just for me.
He scrubbed his forehead with both hands, hiding behind his palms for a second. Inhaling hard, he murmured,
I fucking hate all of this, and most of me wants to tell you to leave and never come back, while the other part wants to beg you to stay so I don't have to be so goddamn alone. It fucking hurts that in a few minutes I'll have to watch you walk away, and I'm not allowed to go with you.
He shook his head, a slave to his own crippling rage.
God damn it, I feel like I'm going to explode.
Larry looked around stealthily, vibrating calm.
Just keep it together for a little longer. You know the deal. Don't do anything to warrant longer sentencing.
His face turned full of encouragement rather than pity.
Don't worry about Al. She's here because she wants to be. Don't deny her the right to see you.
My throat swelled with so many things. I barely managed to breathe with a paralyzing need to touch him, to take away his pain, his loneliness, his entrapment. I would give anything to stay with him, regardless of where we were. To realize that I would willingly trade my rich little life for a world of threadbare sheets and plastic furniture made me understand just how far I'd fallen with no comprehension of what I'd done. He was hurting because of me, and I couldn't do a damn thing to help. My hands balled as I said, I don't care where you are, what you're dressed in, or what you say. I want to be here because you're here. Don't make it sound like I'm not strong enough to be here for you. Temper I kept wound tight, unspooled. This isn't about you anymore, Penn. This is about you, me, Larry, us. His back turned ramrod straight.
Us?
Us.
Even after what I've done?
What about everything I haven't done? We sat staring, breathing, understanding the weight of our own admissions. He'd made me pay. I'd given him a reason to. We both suffered for it. Penn leaned forward, placing his hands on the table. His voice was dark and raspy, filled with fervor.
I like that word.
Almost unconsciously, I mimicked his position, placing my hands so close but not close enough to his. What word? He glanced subtly left and right, checking where the guards were. Then with his eyes capturing mine, he ran his pinky over my thumb, sending an electric firebolt down my finger, up my arm, and directly into my heart.
Us. It gives me something to fight for.
That one simple touch made me wet in an instant. I trembled, eyes hooding. Please. Us was a word connected to love, companionship, and family. Please was a word belonging to a request, a plea, a blatant demand for connection. I hadn't meant to moan it. I didn't mean to press against his fingers as if he could take away the unbearable desire in my blood with a simple touch. But he felt too good, too real, too warm, too pen. All my remaining questions evaporated as he stroked me again, breathing.
Fuck, I want to kiss you.
Larry cleared his throat in warning as a guard looked over at us. He didn't care how passionate or reckless this conversation had become. He allowed Penn to sweep me away and believe for just a second we weren't in a prison. We weren't facing separation. We had all the time in the world to talk and build a bridge over the white water of our past. Penn licked his lips as I ran my finger along his. I completely forgot Larry sat beside me as I moaned. I'd give anything to kiss you. That one piece of honesty allowed the rest to flow unhindered. We tumbled over each other as I said, I'm so sorry for not believing in you, Pen. There's no way you could have been anyone else. I hope you can forgive me. While he said,
You hurt me, Elle, but fuck if I don't care anymore. The past few weeks with you, I want more. I want to tell you who I am, all of it.
Tears sprang to my eyes. You go.
No, you.
We laughed, our hands inching tighter, brushing pinky to thumb.
Hey.
A guard pointed at us.
No touching.
I yanked my fingers back but couldn't swallow my smile. We're going to get you out of here, and then we'll talk.
Then we'll do a shitload more than just talk.
He smirked a little, moving from intense connection to lighthearted joking, a genuine smile breaking his lips.
Going back to my safety deposit box, I always knew you were nosy.
I laughed softly. Only where you're concerned, and only because you never tell me anything.
He'll tell you now, though, won't you, Pen?
Larry asked, deadly serious, reinserting himself into the conversation.
Just like you'll tell her the reason why you have Geo's license is because you're listed as his next of kin and agreed to keep his possessions safe.
Larry turned his black-rimmed glasses onto me.
Geo and Pen became friends, thanks to me taking custody of Stewie. It was complicated for a while, but we're all on the same side now.
I liked how he barely knew me, but he was on my side as much as he was on Penn's. I'd never met anyone so unbiased and willing to trust than him. Penn's forehead furrowed.
I know that must sound idiotic, seeing as Geo hurt you that night and I roughed him up pretty good. But we've shared the same upbringing too long to turn away when the other needs help.
I blinked away the memories of my clothes being torn in the alley. I agree. Enemies can become friends. Sometimes they make better friends as you know the worst. Pen shrugged.
I suppose.
His features shadowed, thinking of things that left a strain around his eyes.
A couple of years ago, I was your enemy.
My heart skipped unhappily. I had no idea what he meant. You were? His desire to talk faded. He reclined in his chair, hiding everything I needed to know.
Shit, I have so much to tell you, but I can't do it here.
He kicked the table leg, making it rattle. A guard pointed at him in warning.
Quit it, or you're back in your cell.
Larry rolled his eyes.
Plenty of time to talk later. Don't get yourself riled up.
Pen raked both hands through his hair.
This place makes me insane.
Stark panic filled his brown gaze.
How long, Larry? How fucking long do I have to keep everything bottled up so I don't screw myself over even more?
Larry consulted his notepad, void of scribbles but filled with whatever processes he'd already put in place.
You know I can't give you a time. I don't like dangling promises because they hurt like hell when they don't come true.
I know.
Pen sighed.
Fuck.
His shoulders tightened, masking the truth that he was nervous and had no one else to trust but us. Trusting someone and then trusting someone were different things. He had no power on what we did on his behalf. He merely had to let Larry arrange dates and file paperwork, while I went after Greg and fought for his assurances that he'd retract his statement and redeem himself by doing the right thing. It was heartbreaking as well as chilling to play God with another's life. Pen gave me a sad smile, wordlessly apologizing for ruining the remaining time we had left. Larry looked over, murmuring about strategy and evidence. Pen and I never took our eyes off of each other, desperately aching, constantly seeking for a way to erase this mess and be together. The 30 minutes went far too fast, and it physically killed me when a bell rang and the inmate said farewell. No hug, no kiss. Nothing but a tear-filled grimace as Pen disappeared all over again.
Miss Charleston, over here!
Stepping out of the correctional facility, I found a sea of reporters, cameras and microphones angled toward me instead of a clear path leading toward the Black Range Rover and my trusty bodyguard. What the hell? Larry instantly covered my face with his briefcase, wrapping his arm around me as he guided me toward David, who leapt out of the Range Rover, barreling through the reporters to get to me. Wrapping me in his protective embrace, David glowered at the churning body parts in our way.
"Leave!"
He boomed, protecting my other side, marching with Larry as we bulldozed through the paparazzi. They sidestepped to avoid being run over, but it didn't stop their probing questions.
"Miss Charleston, are you in a romantic relationship with Penn Everett?"
a young man shouted. "Are you having an affair with Greg Hopeson?" a middle-aged woman with blue-rinsed curls yelled.
"Do you think it's appropriate for the owner of such a prominent retail store to be dating two men at once, both who are in jail, no less?"
a male reporter with a squeaky voice asked. Each question I cowered a little more. Oh my God, how did they hear? Who leaked? Who tattled?
"No comment,"
Larry snapped, keeping his briefcase obscuring my face.
"Go away."
I kept my head down as David opened the back door to the Range Rover, giving me shelter to hop into. Larry jumped in too, not bothering to call his town car. The questions kept plowing through the windows. Questions I had no answers to. Questions I should have been prepared for thanks to my high society position.